We're going to have a Bible reading, and we'll continue going through. We'll continue our theme of worship, which we're looking at this term. So, Hilary, thank you. If you'd be happy to come now, that would be great. Thanks.
This is from the book of John, chapter 4, starting at verse 19. "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." "Woman," Jesus replied, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and has now come, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in the spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, I am he."
Thank you. So last week we began a series on the theme of worship, and I tried to justify why we were doing that, because it's actually really relevant to all of our lives. And I said that we follow Jesus not only for information, but for formation, for the people we are all becoming, because we grow in the likeness of whatever it is we worship. And so who or what we worship impacts all of our lives. And then I used an image of sunflowers. And thank you to those of you who sent me a picture of sunflowers midweek. I was very touched by that. But I showed a little video of how sunflowers are phototropic. They follow the sun across the sky. And we're to be like that, following the light of the sun of God. I also shared my own experience of leading worship recently in a local care home and the factors that made that a beautiful, amazing time of worship. First, their hunger for God. Secondly, their openness to respond to him. And then simply in the worship time, expressing exactly how they felt, their love and their trust in Jesus. Worship is not a performance, but it's an encounter. It's about connecting to him. And so our strapline as a church is not Sunday with God, but life with God. And there's three E's. It's almost as if it's been planned and it's purposeful. But three E's: encounter, equip, engage. But it starts with encounter. So before we can be equipped and before we can go out and change the world, we need to meet God for ourselves. So it begins with encounter. And I encourage everyone to think about, when you come to church, not to be a critic — it's very easy to be that — or even a spectator, but simply a worshiper. And I recommended the book Hosting the Presence by Bill Johnson. I've got 5 copies. I think most of them are out at the moment, but I'd be really glad to lend that to you. Now, today, I just want to think about the practicalities, the nuts and bolts. How do we worship? What are the mechanics of being a worshiper? And that will genuinely be different for us all. But I couldn't resist, because I love Psalm 100, because it's a short psalm. It's only got 5 verses. But verse 4, "Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise." And I don't think it's saying prescriptively, that's the only way you can do it. but it's certainly been truthful for my own experience when I come to God privately or with others with thanksgiving, I sort of feel I'm entering the courtroom of the King. And when I'm praising, I draw near. Conversely, I certainly know if I start moaning, I lose the presence of God. I can have been in a lovely time of worship, and then someone bumps into me, and I can lose it in 3 seconds. So we enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. And I have found that to be truthful. Now, that includes singing, as we've done some singing this morning. But actually, we can enter his gates with silence. That can still be praise. Some people find that really helpful. Most of us at times. It might be in dance. I mean, maybe one day I'm going to be led in liturgical dance and everyone's going to be set free. But until that moment arrives, it's a possibility. Now, some people are so expressive in their dancing. Just do it if you want to. We've got the flags. Just worship, encounter God, use your gifting. That's another way. It could be contemplation, really focusing on the cross, something, a word that we've been singing, something that's happened in the world, and you just give yourself to thinking deeply. So it doesn't have to be that we're all doing the same activity to be doing the same thing, which is encountering God and coming towards him in it. Next week, I'm going to be particularly looking at the role of music. I love music, and it can be really helpful or really distracting, and we all have our favorite. There's no neutral space. We all have our favorite stuff, but I'm going to look at that, so I won't say anything more about that today. But the actual worship is not gauged by the volume, is it? Our worship, I think of as something happening about 7 centimeters behind my eyes, is what's going on in my head or my heart. That is where I'm orientating myself afresh to the Son of God, to apprehending him and giving him my heart, my mind, my will to choose to follow. So it's an inner state of turning to the sunlight, lingering on God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And discipleship, as we try and walk in step with Jesus, includes the idea of learning to worship. I don't think we all do it naturally. There's a verse in Ephesians 5, verse 10. It's a sort of throwaway comment by St. Paul, but I rather like it. He says, and find out what pleases the Lord. You know, when you share your life with someone and you find out they squeeze the toothpaste in a particular way, you find out their ways, just like the psalm, that beautiful Psalm 139 says, you are familiar with all my ways. And so our calling, if we are followers of Jesus, if we're the people of God, is to find out about God, not just about him, but what pleases him. Now, it seemed to me, I'm not saying it's a prophecy, but I created that slide midweek, and then yesterday morning, my dear wife said, would you like a bacon bap? And I thought, she knows me. And there was an egg. There wasn't the potato waffle, but she knows me. Now, I'm content to believe Jesus never had one of these, because it's not kosher. But it's something that pleases me. You find out what pleases people. We can do that with God. In the Old Testament, there's lots of beautiful anthropomorphic moments where it says God sort of looks down and says, oh, that's lovely. That's a pleasing aroma to the Lord. And it could be with a burnt offering, which they did, which of course we don't do, because Jesus is the one perfect sacrifice made once for all. But it's sometimes people are really merciful, or there's justice in the courts, and orphans and widows are being cared for, and God says, oh, that's lovely. Oh, I'm so pleased with my people. They found out what pleased the Lord. I wonder if you have found for your own experience what pleases the Lord. I mean, most of us, we bring our own agenda of what we enjoy. I like this, I don't like that. But does God have a view? I mean, ultimately, our worship is all for an audience of one. Find out what pleases the Lord. So I encourage you to do that, learning alone with God when you pray by yourself. In my 20s, when Sue and I had married, she had orchestral night. Crazy times. And so I didn't go to that, obviously. It was rehearsing. And I thought, oh, I could watch some telly. But I made a decision over a number of years just... Oh, I'm just going to switch that sound off. I made the decision to have my own private worship time, just me and God, just the four of us. And I'd give myself to worshiping God and seeing how that would go. And over time, it sort of grew in me how to worship without being embarrassed by myself. Most of us are a little bit sort of like that. And it wasn't for anyone apart from God. Although on one occasion, and it must have been dark and I'd had the lights on, and I did actually do what I've said I don't do, which is I was dancing before the Lord. And I was a teacher, and a colleague must have walked by and seen me and thought I was having a private silent rave. And which in fact I was. And I just remember on Monday morning saying, what on earth were you doing? So I told her. That didn't make it better for her, actually. But I actually thought, though, of an iceberg. 7/8 of it is below the surface, is unseen. But that's what gives it balance and stability and depth. And as a young Christian, God spoke to me very clearly that my private devotional life, my worship to Him, mattered far more in private than anything I'd ever do in church. I found out what pleased the Lord. That for me was a given. I had to spend more time in private than public worship. And of course, Jesus says this in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6:6. He says, but when you pray, go into your room, close the door, pray to your Father who's unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Finding the place of intimacy with God in private before it's in public. Always sort of worries me if someone has a need to be publicly worshiping, because that's not the priority, I believe. It's a private thing. And it reminded me of the actual dynamic. It's like striking a match. So I'm going to hopefully have a picture. Or have we got... Oh, look. Oh, can we go to the beginning? Oh, could you just take it from the beginning? So this is a slow motion picture. Can you just play it from the beginning again? Is it possible? Yeah. Now watch this match being struck. And I think you put in a bit of effort and there's no show, and then suddenly it ignites. Now that's what I think of as a lovely picture of worship. When I start worshiping, I very rarely feel like it. I have just made that simple choice. I will worship. Let's watch this again in slow motion. There's effort and nothing to show for it. And then it ignites. I wonder if your expectations are calibrated wisely for what happens in worship. Maybe you come in and think, I've had such a rubbish week. Everyone else seems to be really happy. That God seems ever so close. I raise my hands in worship not because I feel excited, but because I'm trying to give attention to God. Sometimes I feel very excited about God, quite often, actually. But often at the beginning, I haven't sort of warmed up. I haven't yet looked on his radiance. So I make the choice to give myself to worshiping God. That's why I love it when the kids are waving the flags. So I'm thinking, I don't know what's going on in their minds, but they're helping me choose to say, yes, God, I give you everything that I have. Damp matches don't work very well. I don't know if you've tried that and you're doing it and it doesn't, and then it snaps. And if we acclimatize ourselves to darkness, we do resist the light. So I encourage you, as soon as you enter here or in your private devotions, just quickly get clean with God. You don't have to, you know, make an hour's lamentation. Just get a clear account. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I've done it again, thought it again, been mean, or whatever it is. And then give yourself to worship, and you will ignite. That's been my experience. And we don't have to feel close to God or holy. We just choose to worship, and then the Spirit comes. So I rather like Psalm 119. Well, some of the verses, it's a bit long, isn't it? But tucked away in the middle there, verse 58, I have sought your face with all my heart. There's a real commitment. And the Hebrew there for your face is actually panim, is the presence of God. So often the Bible talks about the face of God when it means he's really close. That's why the psalmist often says, oh God, please don't hide your face from me. I don't want to feel you're distant from me. And the blessing includes, may God have his face shine upon you. It's the presence of God being really close to you. So the face of God. There's a book. Hey, we've got lots of exciting things.